Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Late Show Pod Show. We're with Stephen Colbert.
What's up, Becca?
We got a great podcast on the pod today. We've got an exclusive podcast, which is our Audience Questions podcast, which we put out every once in a while.
Always enjoy these. I go out every night before the show and I take answers. I provide answers to stupid answers to silly questions from the audience. And I can get a really good sense of how good the audience is based upon what the questions are that night.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Sometimes no one raises their hand. I'm like, I'm here. Did you not know that it was going to be me tonight? And no one raises their hands.
I'm sure people are intimidated if they don't know of it. But you've been doing this for a long time. You're doing this since the Colbert Report, right?
Yeah, I've been taking questions since the very first show of the Colbert Report. Yeah.
When did it – what makes you want to – like, why is this part of your routine?
Well, over there I really wanted to do it because I wasn't going to be myself. I was going to be in character. But I want the audience, the live audience, to have some sense of who I was as a person – A, so they could appreciate that I was doing a character, but B, also the things he was saying with a straight face and with my name sometimes were just absolutely awful. Like, you know, Rosa Parks, frankly, overrated. Unless, hey, listen, I'm all for the civil rights, all for, 100%,
yeah.
You know, fight the power. But she broke the law, you know?
Yeah.
She did break the law, and
yeah,
are we
yeah.
going to, you know, are we going to lionize criminals now? Like, what? I'm just saying there has to be a line. So
yeah.
My character would say stuff like that, and I would want them to know, like, this is not who I am.
Yeah.
And so – and also just just helps have a kind of, any kind of relationship with the audience before you get started. And then I just got turned to – I just came to love it. I just like that moment with the audience. I really like the audience. Like,
yeah.
When I was younger – when I was a young performer, I think like a lot of young performers – who, and it stems from nervousness and fear, is have kind of a hostile relationship to the audience, which is like, I don't care if they don't get my jokes. Like, no, I really do. I'm not trying to hide my joke under a pile of cleverness or hostility at the idea of making a connection with another human being, because I wouldn't be out here if I did desperately need to make some sort of connection with another human being and realize that I'm not alone all the time.
Totally.
And so I just fell in love with that feeling of like looking at someone, having a moment with them, and then also just being able to get a sense of who the audience is on a given night. So I'm kind of addicted to it. It's one of my favorite parts of the show, and I'm so glad we do these because otherwise the audience wouldn't see one of the things I love the most.
Yeah, it's great. I love compiling these. It's my favorite part about the podcast. So please enjoy. This is Audience Questions on The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Are there any questions I could answer before I get going here? I saw you first, Rainbow Splendor. Hi.
I know you have a boat.
I do have a boat. I have two boats.
And do you fish?
I love to fish, yes.
And
I fish as often as I can.
Fish you've ever caught?
The biggest fish I ever caught? I caught a 500-pound marlin. Catch and release. Got to let him go. It was in Bermuda. It was many years ago. It was a summer break, and two of my kids were off at camp, and the third kid was sitting around, and Evie was busy and gone, and he was bored, and it was raining where we are, and I went, wait a second, I've got a TV show. You want to go catch a marlin? Because my dad always wanted to catch a marlin, and my father, I learned to fish with my father, and he hooked onto a marlin and couldn't land it the year before he died, you know, at a young age, and so I went, I've always wanted to catch a marlin for my dad, so I said, literally, I got our passports, we flew to Bermuda. And I knew somebody who knew somebody, and I said, who's got a good boat? So we got onto this boat. The next day, we went out. He landed a marlin, and I landed a marlin.
Wow.
And then we... And the drinking age, he was 16, and the drinking age in Bermuda was 16. So he went to the pool and drank pina coladas, got up in the morning, and came home.
Oh.
And showed mom the photos of the marlin. So that's the biggest fish I've ever caught. But I like to catch, like, trout about that big. That's my favorite thing to catch. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I've been watching your show since day one, in high school, 2015.
Yeah?
Big fan.
Thank you.
I love Late Show. I love Johnny Carson. I love all the big ones.
Oh, me too.
You
have more than one question? You realize somebody else doesn't get a question now. But go ahead.
Who's your favorite to do the job?
Who's my favorite who's ever done one of these jobs?
Any of them.
What'd you say? I get to pick anyone? Very generous of you. God, that's hard. Because I love Johnny. And I watched Johnny when I was a kid. And, of course, Johnny is kind of the model, even more than Parr or Allen, for what these shows are supposed to be. But Letterman was my Johnny. And I started college the first year he started Late Night over at NBC. So I'm, like, first generation. I'm, like, Letterman. The thing is that... But then, again, my Johnny is actually Jon Stewart. You know, the guy from whom I follow. But I'm also really dear friends with Conan, and I admire him tremendously. I've actually become dear friends with Dick Cavett, who I really model my interview style on, is more like a Dick Cavett interview. That's the kind of guests I want. That's the kind of interview I want to do. And yet now I'm also really dear friends with all the other members of the Strike Force 5. I just can't pick, my friend. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. My appendix?
Yeah, you were so sick.
I did not see the Lord at that time. But I did have some morphine, and I did have some Dilaudid, and I saw an angel in the form of my wife. Would someone take that and make a little clip and send that to Evie, please? anybody else got a question? Yes, sir, in the back. You were a theater major at Northwestern, really?
I was.
How long ago?
10 years.
10 years ago, okay.
You spoke at my commencement, actually.
Oh, okay, so 2011.
2011.
Yeah, that's all right, yeah.
I wanted to ask you about something you said that really resonated with me. You said at the beginning, when you started, you wanted to be a serious, dramatic actor.
I did, yes. I wanted to be Hamlet.
Yes!
Not just play Hamlet, I wanted to be Hamlet. I wanted to be miserable at people. I wore a lot of black, I had a beard, I was a poet/jerk. Yes.
And later you found comedy.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I found comedy. Big choice. What?
Yeah, and so many people, like, you start out wanting to do one thing and then do something else.
Yeah.
So, was there a moment or a memory where the door was kicked open in your mind that you could do and wanted to do comedy while you were trying to...
When was the moment that I chose, like, no, I'm going to do comedy with my life? I can tell you exactly the moment. I remember the moment of making the decision. Whoa. And that was the thing about doing drama, and I did drama and experimental theater and things like that. And if you go out on stage and you f up in a drama, if you f up in some experimental, like, black box kind of theater that I was doing, and you go backstage, everybody would be at their little, you know, their little makeup spots going, what's going on out there? Seems pretty quiet. Whatever, like that. Because people, like, they won't name that you just f up. Comedy is different. I was about to go on stage. I was backstage at Second City in the ETC, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to stick all the way through and try to make it a main stage at Second City, or I was still quitting every so often to go do straight theater in Chicago. And I was backstage with a guy named Dave Rozowski, and we were about to walk on stage. We were rehearsing a show. We were in the middle of a process of trying to turn over a new show and improvise new pieces and try out new material. And it was a rough part of the show, so rough part of the process. So we had somebody go out there named Jenna Jolovitz, who's a wonderful comedian and writer out in L.A. now. And we said, just go out there and do a scene. Go do something short. We need someone to kill time so we can change our costumes. Go do Wales. Now, Wales was a scene that goes like this. It's called a blackout, meaning it's just out there. You're out there for like 30 seconds to a minute, and it's just a little pace keeper. usually just one person. And so Wales is this. You walk out, usually you have a beret and wear a poncho or something like that, and you have a guitar, and you go, welcome to, you know, Childress Cafe. We love folk music here. Thank you for being here for the protest last night. I would like to do a song now for the Wales. And then you make a big thing of tuning up your guitar for a while. And then you have your mic like this. Can I have a mic? So I'll just, this mic right here. You know, I'd like to do a song now for the Wales. And then you tune up your guitar for a while, and then you go.
Whatever.
You see, it's not a great joke, but it always works. So keep in mind, I'm standing backstage with Dave Rozowski about to go on. And the stage is really small. Like, the stage is only about this wide, and there's a little wings right here. And the wings just have, like, small wings, and they have just little curtains in front of them that we hide behind till we enter in a blackout. So anyway, we say to Jenna, please go out there and do Wales, just something to kill time. She's like, oh, I love that. I'll do that. So she goes out. She's got the beret on. She's wearing some folksy flowing outfit like that. She's got the guitar. She's going ding, ding, ding. She's tuning up the guitar. She goes, I'd like to do a song for you now. And then she starts doing the whistling and the clicking and the psh and all that, and nothing's happening. And we're looking at each other going, what's wrong with the audience? I mean, it's not a great blackout, but it always works.
Yeah.
And then we hear Jenna go, oh, I forgot to mention it's a song for Wales. She was just out there whistling and clicking. So Dave and I looked at each other, we went, oh, and we threw our arms around each other, and we started laughing so hard. We were hugging each other for the love of our experiencing how much agony she was going through. And we knew what it felt like, and we'd never seen it so cleanly executed up that bad before. And we were laughing so hard that our knees got weak, and we started to slide down like a teepee, like collapsing like this. And our legs, and we're in the wings. We're in this wing right here. And she made, keep in mind, she's right here in the middle of, at the mic going like, how do I get out of the scene now? And we're laughing so hard that we're going, ha, 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 you can't hide. Like, no one in the audience is laughing. They can only hear our laughter. And slowly, slowly, our feet start to slide out onto stage. And we're doing this. We're laughing so hard we don't do. And I thought in that moment, I want to do nothing but comedy for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And I'll tell you the real reason why. And the real reason why was not just that we were in so much joy, but Jenna was laughing.
Wow.
Because she heard us laughing, and she understood what was funny about it. And I thought, if this is how much joy all of us can have, regardless of the audience, the joy we could have when someone f***s up as much as you can possibly f*** up, I went, well, that's a life I want to live. So that's why I chose that moment. There you go. Plus, I was doing a fair amount of straight theater in Chicago, and the straight theater I had to do for free, and the comedy I always got paid. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Do you remember me from a couple of years ago? I was the girl you gave the birthday cake to.
Yes, I remember you.
Thank you very much for that cake.
What'd you say?
I said, thank you very much for that cake.
You're most welcome. It was the end of the show, right?
It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I was very moved, and my mother yelled at me and gave me Irish guilt because I didn't send you a thank you card.
Wow, I'm terrible at thank you notes.
Yes,
so what's your question, love?
I want to know if you remember me, and also,
What was it like to interview Eminem? Wow, that is from before this show started.
Wow.
Quick story, and then I know we got to do the show, but between the two shows, between the Colbert Report and this show, you know, I'd already done 10 years of shows. Like, oh, you got to start over again. I'm like, okay, I don't know what the I'm doing. And so I was like, I can't believe I had to do a first show. There's all this pressure on a first show. And then my head writer, Opus Moreski, said, why don't we just do a first show someplace else? Let's just do a first show someplace. And so, and I said, like, where? And he goes, like, at a, you know, local cable access studio somewhere out in America. So we went to, what was the name of the town?
Monroe,
Michigan. We went to Monroe, Michigan, and we took over on one Sunday night a show called Only in Monroe. And the hosts were one woman named Kehlani Rerofko Wilson, and that's only one person's name, and then another woman who I can't remember. Their average rating, honest to God, their average rating, we asked, and they said it's 12. Wow. And I said, 1,200? They said, no, just 12.
Wow.
And we wanted a famous Michigander to come, and so we called Eminem. We called Marshall, and he said, yeah, I'll come down. He did not know what he was in for. He had no idea what was going to happen, and he rolled with it really well, but we did not explain to him what was happening. So if you watch, if you go Colbert, Eminem, only in Monroe, or Colbert, Eminem interview, that 20-minute interview, it's long.
It's long, yeah.
Interview, he is discovering what he's in, what he's in for in the interview. It was one of the most fun things because I did the show, I did that still kind of in character. I hadn't quite dropped character yet, and I didn't know who Eminem was. And that was tough for him. That was really, really tough for Eminem, for me, have no idea. I'm like, so what if the music doesn't work out? What then? And I know it's fun, and you do the hip and then the hopping and the rap and stuff, and but, like, you got to think about the future, Marshall. That was a lot of fun. So, but then here's one other thing. So we do the show, and then we broadcast it that night at 11 o'clock, late-night show on local access, cable access in Monroe, Michigan. And we're checking our phones to see, like, Twitter going to blow up because there's Stephen Colbert and Marshall Mathers, and it's on a cable access, and someone's going to stumble across it, and it's going to blow up, and this is going to be huge. And we're purposefully not telling anyone because we wanted to really go viral. We wanted to, like, we want a real virality. We wanted to do something kind of special and stupid that would just blow up. And so the whole show's over, and no one tweeted anything about it. And then I looked around the control room where we were broadcasting, and I'm like, there are 12 people in here. Wow. Tonight, we were the 12.
Wow.
That was it. But did you enjoy it?
I did.
I did very much so. Give my best to your mother. Are we ready to do it? Y'all ready to do the show?
Yeah.
Y'all ready to do the show, everybody? Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus, starting May 1st.
Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.